Very well. Good morning, everyone. I'm Alexis Strauss-Hacker. It sounds funny to say, but chair of the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Quality Control Board, and welcome to today's board meeting. We'll call the roll for board members in just a moment. Today's meeting is hybrid, so in addition to in-person participants here in the auditorium, we can receive public comment through our Zoom meeting platform. If you are remote and intend to comment or think you might be interested in commenting, you need to be in the Zoom meeting space. If you have not already received a link for the Zoom meeting, you can visit our website and register. If you're in person and wish to speak, you may also register online or with the assistance of the attendant in the foyer here today. For those in the Zoom meeting, you'll be muted until it's your turn to speak. Our staff will then promote you, and you will need to unmute yourself on the Zoom platform or your phone if applicable. When you're done speaking and the board members have asked any questions they may have, you will be placed back on mute in the meeting space. For those in the auditorium waiting to speak, you'll be called by name when it's your turn. Please make your way down to the podium so we can best see and hear you. Speakers will be given 3 minutes for commentary, and we ask that you state your name and your affiliation, if applicable, when called upon. Thank you for joining us today. Now, Julie Haas, our board clerk, will call the roll.
Good morning, everyone. Board Member Ransom.
Here.
Board Member Beelen.
Here.
Board Member Gunther is absent. Board Member Kissinger.
Here.
Remote. Board Member Batty.
Here.
Vice Chair Young.
Here.
And Chair Hacker.
Present. Thank you. We have a quorum physically present for today's meeting, and welcome to everyone. Let's move to the public forum, item two. I'd like to open our meeting to the public forum and remind everyone the public forum is for items that are not on the agenda today and that are not a pending or impending matter, which means they're not about to come up on our agenda in the next several months. Commenters are welcome to speak on agenda items at the appropriate time during the meeting. Please consult our board clerk, Julie Haas, who is seated in front of the podium here today if you have questions. Now I will call on each of our public speakers who have registered to speak under the public forum portion of the meeting. If you are remote and have not been called, please raise your virtual hand on the Zoom platform by clicking on the reactions icon and then on the raise hand icon. That way we will know to call on you. Each speaker is allowed 3 minutes, as I said earlier, and will be timed and notified. There is a timer visible on the screen. Thank you. Do we have people registered for public forum?
No registrations have come in online.
Is there anyone present who wishes to speak during public forum? Very well, let's move on. Public forum is now closed. We'll proceed with review of the previous board meeting minutes. First, the minutes of our February 14th board meeting. These are included in our board packets. They're posted online. Are there any edits or revisions to the board minutes? Okay, I see none. Is there a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second.
Would you call a roll for the vote?
Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Beelen.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Vice Chair Young.
Abstain. I wasn't here.
And Chair Hacker.
Aye. Thank you. The February 14th, 2024 board meeting minutes have been adopted by the board. Let's turn to item four, the chair, board member, and executive officer report. Let's first go with our state water board liaison, Sean McGuire, and colleague Eric Oppenheimer, who is the new executive director for the State Water Resources Control Board. We welcome Eric and Sean. The floor is yours.
Hi, Chair Strauss-Hacker and board members. Good morning. I don't see Eric Oppenheimer on the platform yet, and it may just be that he's we'll be a few minutes out, so we can handle this however you'd like.
Please go ahead.
Okay. Well, I have a very short report because what my plan is to actually hand this over to Eric for an introduction by him and an update once he's here. So we will do that, and hopefully he can log on soon. But what I will update you on is last month, the board, the State Water Resources Control Board, adopted the 2024 Integrated Report and 303D List update, which by the Clean Water Act, we're required to do every 2 years, and it has been a challenge over many, many cycles. And not to go into all of the details of this, but generally every 2 years, three of the regional board areas' potential listings for water bodies that are impaired for different impairments to beneficial uses or water bodies that might best come off that list are reviewed, and that list is updated. And so this last cycle that we, the state board adopted in February, included the San Francisco, so your regional board, Los Angeles regional board, and Santa Ana regional board. So this is the second time that the review has been centralized with State Water Resources Control Board staff. I know that has been also done in partnership with the Regional Water Quality Control Board staffs as well. And the review in many respects has been, and it is an ongoing improvement process, but is in the process of being automated, using available data as much as possible. I believe they reviewed something on the order of over 5 million lines of evidence here in this last cycle, which is pretty remarkable. The summary is they reviewed 1,594 water body segments and 20,303 water body pollutant combinations amongst all the regions that we're reviewing. And what you might be most interested in as well, but how did that affect the San Francisco Bay region? And that, at the end of the day, translated into 133 new listings on top of around 348 that you currently had on the list. And often the listings translate to a variety of actions. Sometimes it's it depends on the quality and amount of data, and sometimes it translates to watch and see how that that impairment goes, and up to a total maximum daily load needs to be developed to address the source of pollution and impairment in that water body. So it's a very important list. It's something that I know our staff and the board takes very seriously in our update cycle. And just really am encouraged by the fact that we're on time. And that was a very important step and a very important indicator of the progress that we've been making to become more efficient as we need to do. So that was the update item that I had for you today. And it looks like Eric Oppenheimer has joined. So I'm glad to see him here. I bought enough time. So I will, very happy to introduce to you anyone who doesn't already know Eric Oppenheimer. He's, as our new executive director, he's should be a very familiar face to most. He was our chief deputy director for several years. I'm not remembering how many years, but several years. And he's a great asset to the State Water Board. And we're so very lucky and fortunate to have him as our new executive director. So with that, Eric, I wanted to open the floor to you and let you say a few words.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. Thank you, Board Member McGuire. As said, I'm Eric Oppenheimer. I started as executive director at the beginning of the year, So new to the position, but certainly not new to the water boards. I've actually been a state employee for about 28 years, and most of that time spent with the water boards in various capacities. Don't want to go into too much on my background, but I will say that I worked for almost a decade at two regional water quality control boards. Actually started at the Lahontan Water Board and then worked at the Central Valley Regional Water Board. And so I just mentioned that because I do feel like I have a good appreciation of an understanding of a lot of the programs that you work on at the regional boards, and also understand, excuse me, a lot of the challenges that you face. And so I'm just looking forward to building on what I think is already a really strong partnership with Executive Officer Eileen White to help both our boards advance what I think are a number of shared priorities. My understanding was that you were hoping for an update on two issue areas that are currently, you know, in development here at the state board, our water conservation regulation or our water use efficiency regulation, and then an update on Bay Delta Plan. And if that is still of interest, I'm happy to give a brief update on both those topics.
Please go ahead.
Great. So on water conservation, this has been something the board's been working on for several years now, and working in partnership with the Department of Water Resources. But I think, as most people are aware, we're adopting, in the process of developing, a regulation that was required under legislation called the Making Conservation a California Way of Life legislation. That was signed into law in 2018, and we've been really working again with DWR on it since 2018. So this has been quite a long process. Recent history is that last summer we put out a draft regulation for a fairly extended public comment period. We held a workshop during that public comment period. We received a lot of input. It was approximately 400 comment letters. We had a very long and thorough hearing or workshop on the regulation. There was a lot of concerns raised by the water supplier community during the comment period, or perhaps shortly after the comment period closed. There was a report that was put out by the Legislative Analyst Office that also raised a number of concerns and provided recommendations. And so with all that input, we really took that into consideration. And after the comment period ended, we put together a work group of really thoughtful leaders in the water conservation space, both from the NGO community and from conservation groups, as well, obviously, from the water supplier community. And so it included a lot of water suppliers. It also included a lot of the two big water supplier associations, CMUA and AQUA. And we used that time to really understand everybody's concerns and to help develop options for revising our first draft of the regulation. We then briefed our board members on those options and used all that input to develop a revised regulation, which actually went out yesterday. So this is a very timely update. And so now there's a revised regulation that takes into account a lot of the input that we received. It's out for a short 15-day comment period. Our board will also be holding a workshop on the revised regulation on March 20th. That will be an in-person workshop in Sacramento, but it will also be a Zoom workshop, much like your own, like your board meeting today. And so welcome anyone to participate either in person or by Zoom. We're looking forward to that. After that workshop ends, we plan to take the additional comments that we receive and determine if any additional updates are needed. And our goal is to bring the regulation for board consideration, for state water board consideration, sometime this summer, probably July. If the board moves forward with adoption, we anticipate that the updated regulation would be in effect in January 2025. So I'll pause there.
Eric, questions? Next week's workshop on the 20th, what's the start time?
I believe it will be 9:30 is our usual start time.
I think it's 9 a.m.
Oh, it's 9. That's right. We switched. Thank you, board member.
Yeah, sure. That's why I'm here.
Sounds good. And on to your next item.
Next item is another really critical topic and a very high priority for our board, and that's the update to the Bay Delta plan. On that, we released a very thorough and extensive staff report in September of last year. That report was approximately 6,000 pages, and it laid out a number of options and alternatives for updating the Bay Delta plan for the protection of the fish and wildlife beneficial use for the Bay Delta and the contributing watershed for the Bay Delta. And those alternatives included some what I would call flow-based alternatives that looked at varying amounts of unimpaired flow, different ranges between, I think the total range we looked at was like between 35% of unimpaired flow and 75% of unimpaired flow. I may not be getting those numbers exactly right, but we looked at different alternatives and in different ranges, including a proposed plan amendment of 45 to 65% of unimpaired flow with a 55% of unimpaired flow starting point. In addition to those flow-based alternatives, we also evaluated a voluntary agreement alternative, or VA alternative, as it's often called. And for those who are not familiar, the voluntary agreement alternative is essentially a proposal that was submitted by a consortium of public water agencies and also included signatories from the California Natural Resources Agency. And the concept behind the voluntary agreement is that it's a proposal for a mix of both additional flows from the Delta tributaries and Delta outflow in combination with improved and expanded habitat. So the idea the premise behind the approach with the voluntary agreements is that the State Water Board generally has authority over additional flows and adding additional flows to the system through its water right process or through its regulatory processes. And flow is flow is a very important component of habitat and is necessary to improve Bay Delta conditions. But the idea behind the voluntary agreements is that if you can sort of marry flow and habitat together, you can amplify those benefits and perhaps do it with a lower water cost. And so again, that's a proposal from water suppliers, water providers, public water agencies, and state agency signatories that the board has not made a decision on, but is certainly considering. And next steps on that, we recently did two things. We recently posted on our website the independent peer reviews for the scientific basis report for the voluntary agreements. And we also recently put out a notice for a 3-day workshop that we're going to be holding in late April. It's actually April 24th, 25th, 26th. That's going to be focused on the voluntary agreements to give both our board and the public the opportunity to better understand what's being proposed in that alternative and ask questions. And so after that workshop concludes, the next major milestone from the board will be to put out the regulatory text of the program of implementation for the basin plan amendment that we're undertaking, and that will also start another opportunity for public comment. After that, the intent is to take all the public comment we receive through multiple streams, and develop a response to comments, a final staff report, and bring a alternative for board consideration, which we don't have the timing mapped out for that exactly yet. But those are the general broad strokes of the process that is in front of us. And happy to take any questions on that.
Yeah, I'm going to check with board members. That's a great deal of work before now and yet to come. And one thing I was wondering, if your schedule permits, when the board next meets here on May 8th, if you might give us an update on those workshops, which will have occurred April 24th to 26th. But let me ask board members if there are questions. There aren't, but Eric, we congratulate you on your appointment to this very important position, and we thank you and Sean for being available to update us. It's much appreciated.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to introduce myself and update you on those two important State Water Board actions, and really looking forward to working with you.
And Sean, congratulations on getting the 303D list out the door, and thank you for working with us and the other boards as we work through the various issues we raised at the time. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Okay. Appreciate that.
All right.
See you
thanks.
Soon.
We'll see you next time in May.
Yes. See you then.
Very
bye-bye.
Good. Okay. I'm going to ask board members if they have anything to report. I'll start with board member Kissinger.
Nothing for me, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Bill. Board member Beelan?
No, I have nothing.
Board member Ransom?
No, nothing to report.
Board member Betty?
All quiet for me today.
Very well. And board member Young?
Yes, but actually next month, or the next meeting, I hope to report on some tours I'll be taking as far as some direct potable reuse. I'm very curious to see how that's being implemented at some of the test sites, but that doesn't happen until leave the middle of next month. So when I have that, I'd like to bring it back and tell everyone about it.
Yeah, I would love to hear it. Thank you. All right, I'd like to call on our executive officer, Eileen White, for her report.
Great. I just want to let the board know that the San Francisco Estuary Partnership Conference was scheduled for this week, and it was going to occur at the Henry Kaiser Convention Center here in Oakland. There was over 600 participants registered, and we were fortunate to have several staff that were going to present. And we had several staff volunteer so they could get admission. Because of the state deficit, we can't send people to conferences. Unfortunately, late on Monday evening, we found out that the City of Oakland Fire Marshal determined that the center failed its inspection and the conference had to be canceled. Yeah, so really unfortunate. We'll keep you apprised of when it's rescheduled to see if we can get any complimentary tickets for board members. But yeah, so we have a lot of staff with some great presentations. If nothing else, they'll share them with our own team here at the Water Board. And then the last thing I wanted to just update you about, it kind of, you try to, you know, things hit the news quickly, is last Thursday, March 7th, there was red discoloration that was observed in Lake Merritt. And it quickly hit the news, and our team quickly mobilized, and we coordinated with our partners. We took samples. The good news is I actually inspected the lake first thing Friday morning, and the red discoloration had pretty much dissipated. We did check the dissolved oxygen levels throughout the entire period, and they maintained really well. There was no dead fish. Also, chlorophyll A, which is a good indicator of algae growth. If the numbers go up, you can expect it's been within the normal range. So we're not even sure what caused the red discoloration. There was a report of some reddish water coming in through a storm drain. But if nothing else, it gave us an opportunity to put into action our response if there is any sort of harmful algae bloom is suspected. And it was great to coordinate with our partners at the Department of Public Health and the Rotary Institute here, who also partnered with us. So the good news is it was not a big deal. And as we go into spring and summer, we will be continuing to monitor Lake Merritt, and we'll be continuing to monitor San Francisco Bay. And we are lucky that the City of Oakland has installed 3 online continuous monitors at Lake Merritt that we can look at any time, what the dissolved oxygen levels are, and the chlorophyll A is in the lake. So those are useful tools that we did not have in the past. So just wanted to share that with you.
So there really was no algae?
Well, there's always some algae present, but it's not a harmful algae bloom. Dissolved oxygen levels at all three locations were good. It had dissipated. I was there at 6:30 Friday morning and went all the way on the lake twice, and it had dissipated, checked again on the weekend. And it would have been unusual with, you know, the cold weather and the rain we've been getting. It was like, really? So we're not really sure. The mystery remains what caused the red discoloration, but it was not anything to be concerned about. Yeah.
Anything more?
That's it.
Thank you for your written report in our packets as well, and the update on the recycled water team of two with the new resources we have. That's good to know. All right. Before we proceed with the board items, I'd like to administer the oath. All relevant evidence that any person desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing, first by the board staff, second by the discharger, third by public agencies, and fourth by any other interested parties. The board and board counsel may ask questions to clarify the testimony of a witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witness by others will be allowed following completion of direct testimony by all persons. Each person testifying will commence by stating his or her name, whom he or she represents, and whether he or she took the oath to tell the truth. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony reasonably relevant to the issues. All board files, exhibits, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this process. Additional written material will be made part of the record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify in the hearing will now rise or raise their hand. Do you promise to tell the truth? Thank you. And now, Eileen, would you like to continue with the board items on our calendar for today?
Yes, thank you so much. So we have two uncontested items I want to briefly summarize. The first one, we'd be reissuing the MPDS permit for a municipal waste facility in Half Moon Bay, where naturally occurring groundwater comes in contact with our landfill system before it's treated by a groundwater treatment system that infrequently discharges to the local creek. And the draft permit before you today incorporates new requirements for industrial stormwater discharges that eliminate the need for BFI to maintain separate MPDS coverage under the statewide industrial stormwater permit. And we didn't receive any comments on this tentative order. And then the next item, item 5B, is the reissuance of the MPDS permit for the City of Millbrae and North Baywide System Unit, and that regulates the discharge of treated wastewater through a deep water outfall that leads to San Francisco Bay. And the draft permit is very similar to the current permit, and the notable changes included updated toxicity requirements consistent with the statewide toxicity provisions, updated bacteria limits based on the statewide bacteria provisions, and updated chlorine limits based on our blanket order. And I don't think there's any public comment, but we'll check with Julie. Yes.
Oh, just folks to answer questions if you have any.
Any questions or comments? All right, let's keep going.
Right, so I recommend the board adopt both orders.
Would you like us to take a vote separately now on this one and then proceed to the Millbrae North Bay side system? Or would you like us to...
Can they do them together?
Yeah,
you can do them together.
Okay. Yes. All right, okay. Let's keep going.
So I'll make a motion. Do you need a motion?
We haven't heard any comment on the second one. Do you want... I have some questions on the second item.
Okay. Yeah, so the second one... go ahead. Chair Hacker, we have staff here.
Okay, I appreciate the work of our permit writers, Marcos de la Cruz and Debbie Fan. On the Millbrae North Bayside System Unit, I note that they are considering a private sewer lateral program and additional wet weather storage, and I'm wondering how can we encourage them heartily to get on with this? I sort of feel like so many systems across the Bay Area worked very hard to put in place private sewer lateral programs, and I was surprised to realize that there was still some out there that need to get on that train.
And I'll let Bill respond.
Thank you, Bill.
Good morning. This is Bill Johnson with the NVDS Wastewater Division. So the question is, how can we further encourage POGWs to have private sewer lateral programs? So what we've been doing is we use the tools we have. So when we have some discretion, sometimes we hold that as part of, you know, a condition that we use for our discretion. So when a treatment plant is asking for permission to blend because its flows are too large, then we'll say, hey, that's something that you need to do to get under control because you can't handle your wet weather flows. But handling the wet weather flows at Millbrae has not been a problem. So we haven't had a tool to actually require them to have a private sewer lateral program. Although we certainly encourage all POTWs to have them when we can.
Indeed. Can I ask a couple more questions while you're captive here?
Sure.
What does the plant do with its biosolids?
I don't know. James, do you know what the plant does with their biosolids? It should say in the fact sheet.
I thought it would, but I didn't find it. We can come back to that later. I don't want to.
That's safe assumption. Most of our plants send them to landfills.
Yeah.
I don't know specifically what Millbrae does, but that's going to be changing.
They are treated and hauled off site to various land application sites for beneficial use.
Yeah, that I saw. And then lastly, in the appendix on pretreatment, it said that there was pretreatment significant industrial user reporting, but earlier in the permit package, it said that Millbrae has no SIUs. And so I was a little bit confused. It could be that the appendix is just our standard language.
That's exactly right. So attachment H is our standard provisions for when there's a pretreatment program. And so all the language there is the same for every permit that has a pretreatment program. But the facts of whether there's a significant industry is in the order itself or in the fact sheet.
Yeah. So I understood they have no SIUs.
Yes.
Okay. And as you know, I'm fond of the biosolids and pretreatment programs. So from time to time, I have such questions. Are there other comments or questions among board members? Bill, anything? Let me look around.
Nothing for me.
All right. I think we thank you for the work on this and for the updated requirements. And there are, Julie, no commenters that I'm aware of? And yes. No one in the room? All right. Eileen, back to you for a moment. You recommend?
Yes, I'm recommending the board adopt both orders.
All right. May I please have a motion?
So moved. Second.
There is.
Julie, would you call a vote? A roll call vote?
And I just want to make sure that was Board Member Batty and Board Member Beelin. Got it. All right. Board Member Ransom?
Aye.
Board Member Beelin?
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger?
Aye.
Board Member Batty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Young?
Aye.
And Chair Hacker?
Aye. Thank you. And I know we were able to move through that very quickly, and it belies the amount of work done by the team here, and we thank them for that and for the renewal of the permits. Eileen, would you like to move on to the next item on the agenda?
Yes, thank you so much, Chair Hacker. So this item is going to provide an update on the implementation of the statewide restoration general order since its adoption by the State Water Board on August 16, 2022, and an update on the BRIT since it was formed in August of 2019. Liz Morrison, Senior Environmental Scientist and Section Leader in the Watershed Division, will begin by providing an update on the statewide restoration order, and then Agnes Ferris, Senior Environmental Scientist, will provide an update on the Bay Restoration Regulatory Integration Team, also known as the BRIT. And then we'll have Paul Hahn, who's the Program Manager of the State Water Board Watersheds and Wetland Sections, will provide a statewide update on the implementation of the statewide general order. And that'll be followed by Luisa Valiella, who will provide an update from EPA Region 9. Super. Thank you.
Liz, when you're ready, please go ahead. Okay.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Liz Morrison. And I had
the Northeast Bay section in the Watershed Management Division here at the Water Board. This morning, I'll be presenting an information item on the implementation of the statewide restoration general order. In February 2022, Water Board staff presented an information item on the newly adopted order, and you asked us to come back and give you an update on the implementation of the order in our region. And as Executive Officer Arlene said, after I speak, Agnes Ferris will be speaking about the BRIT and restoration projects. Next slide, please. So the State Water Board adopted the new statewide restoration general order in August of 2022. The order is intended to expedite review and authorization of large restoration projects, helping the state to achieve its climate change adaptation, habitat restoration, species recovery, and water quality improvement goals. To adopt the order, the State Water Board also prepared and adopted a programmatic environmental impact report. The order applies to projects that exceed limitations of a separate, small, statewide habitat restoration order. Projects under the statewide general order must comply with water quality control plans, including our basin plan. That means that we work with project proponents so that the project is protected of water quality and results in a net increase in the area, functions, and or services of aquatic or riparian habitat. Next slide. So the order requires a pre-application consultation to submission of an application for coverage under the order. Early consultation is key to the process and has resulted in applications that are mostly complete when submitted. Overall, the time of receipt from a complete application to issuance of the notice of applicability is under 30 days, with most projects taking less than 2 weeks to receive an authorization. The pre-application consultation has identified a few projects that did not qualify for the order, and we have redirected those projects to another permitting mechanism at the Water Board. We have also identified some projects that applied for the general order. However, we figured out that they could go under the smaller statewide habitat restoration order, and we assisted them in attaining coverage under that order. Next slide. Since the order was adopted, we have issued 8 notice of applicabilities, and we currently have 5 applications in review. Projects that enrolled under the order types are tidal marsh restoration, restoration of stream floodplains and wetlands, stream work to increase fish habitat and remove barriers to fish passage, as well as pier pile removals. Next slide. CEQA compliance is one of the biggest hurdles to getting restoration projects permitted. The State Board adopted the programmatic EIR with the intent of expediting the permitting process. However, in our region, none of the lead agencies under CEQA have used the programmatic EIR because they don't believe it provides a level of detail needed for CEQA compliance. While we haven't used the programmatic EIR, we have found alternatives to deal with CEQA compliance. These include the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's statutory exemption for restoration projects, or what we call the SERP. We've also used project-specific CEQA documents, such as an EIR or a mitigated NEG-DEC. We've also used CEQA categorical exemptions for additional review. And these have all enabled us to still process and expedite the permitting process under the general order. It is likely that going forward, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife statutory exemption for restoration projects will be the mechanism that can continue to be the effective mechanism for us, for the Water Board, to approach the accomplishing CEQA compliance. One concern is that at this time, the SERP is proposed to be sunsetted in January of 2025, and we hope that CDFW extends this program because it's the one that we're finding the most useful. Next slide. So statewide restoration, the statewide restoration general order has been an effective expediting the permitting process at the Water Board. We continue our collaborative approach of working with project proponents to ensure that project designs protect water quality. Water Board staff are meeting monthly with California Department of Fish and Wildlife, State Board, other regional board, as well as Division of Water Rights staff to discuss the order and implementation and facilitate working together in collaborative approach. This past December, we participated in the Advancing Restoration Interagency Summit, where statewide California Department of Fish and Wildlife, regional board, and state board staff all came together to talk about implementing the order. And the state board staff, Paul Hahn, will speak to that a little bit after I do. And at this time, I'd like to hand it over to Agnes Ferris to speak about the BRIC.
Next slide.
Good morning. I'm Agnes Ferris, and I'm the Water Board representative on the Bay Restoration Regulatory Integration Team, or the BRIT. Next slide, please. Today, I'll be presenting some highlights of the BRIT's work since it was formed in 2019. The BRIT was formed to improve the permitting process for multi-benefit habitat restoration projects, meaning projects include restoration, but are also designed to achieve other goals, including flood management and public access. I'll tell you a bit about the BRIT's pre-application process and how that's benefiting projects, give you a status update on the BRIT's projects, and provide a brief summary on the BRIT's performance so far. Next slide. First, I want to introduce you to the rest of the BRIT. It's made up of dedicated staff from the 6 state and federal regulatory agencies with jurisdiction over habitat restoration in the Bay. Pictured here, starting on the left, we have Frankie Malamud-Rome with a Corps, Allie Weber-Stover with NOAA Fisheries, that's me in the middle, Valerie Bloom with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Tammy Shane with California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and Skylar Olson with the Bay Conservation Development Commission. Not pictured here are Jen Siu with US EPA, participates on an ad hoc basis, and Dina Bolin, also with a Corps, who is our note taker. Next slide. Thanks. Under a typical permitting scenario, projects submit their permit applications after they've developed their designs. Then they meet with each agency separately to discuss permitting requirements. At this time, the agencies might request additional information, and projects might need to design or might need to modify their design or construction methods to meet permitting requirements. This back and forth can result in permitting delays. The BRIT is working to improve this permitting process by focusing on the pre-application phase. We encourage projects to coordinate with us early during the project planning and design so that we can identify potential issues and identify additional information the agencies will need. With the BRIT, projects can meet with all the agencies at the same time and receive coordinated feedback. The BRIT reviews projects and works closely together to ensure that we're avoiding giving conflicting guidance. In the cases where agencies have different guidelines or conflicting policies, we can coordinate on a path forward and avoid potential permitting delays. This pre-application process helps to avoid potential permitting delays by the time projects are ready to submit their permit applications. We can also help projects navigate the restoration permitting tools that are available. Besides the SRGO, there is US Fish and Wildlife Service's Programmatic Biological Opinion for Restoration Projects, CDFW's Cutting the Green Tape Restoration Management Permit, and the Statutory Exemption for Restoration Projects that Liz mentioned earlier. And there's the Expedited Letter of Concurrence for Informal Section 7 Consultation with NOAA Fisheries. The BRIT is reviewing projects and advising applicants on how they can meet the eligibility requirements for these restoration permitting tools. Based on the BRIT's experience so far, projects that are going through the pre-application process are submitting more complete applications, which helps us to issue permits in less time. We're also getting projects that are better designed to avoid and minimize impacts to habitat and special status species, and that are better designed to maximize restoration. Next slide, please. The BRIT has reviewed a total of 31 projects so far, varying in size and complexity. These projects are designed to adapt to rising tides by restoring tidal marsh, seasonal wetlands, mudflats, coarse beaches, and oyster reefs, and by constructing ecotone levees or horizontal levees to protect low-lying areas and critical infrastructure such as wastewater treatment plants. We have a total of 9 projects fully permitted by the agencies, 5 projects in the application phase, 17 projects in the pre-application phase. Of the 9 projects permitted, 7 have completed construction. To date, the BRIT has issued a total of about 74 permits and other authorizations since it was formed in 2019. Pictured here on the left is the Lower Walnut Creek Tidal Restoration Project breaching its levee in October 2020. And pictured on the right is the 900 Innes and India Basin Remediation Project, which removed derelict concrete structures, debris, and contaminated sediment, and was completed in July 2022. During your field tour next month, you will see the next phase of this project, which is the construction of the 900 Innes Park. Next slide. The BRIT was established with a multi-agency memorandum of understanding that includes performance criteria. The BRIT is meeting its performance criteria with agencies responding to permit applications within 30 days and meeting their agency-specific permitting timelines. We regularly coordinate with project proponents to ensure that we're on schedule to authorize their projects in time to meet their construction schedules and to ensure that we're improving the permitting process. Overall, we're also receiving positive feedback from online surveys. Looking ahead, we continue to support restoration projects by identifying additional efficiencies in the project design, review, and authorization process, by communicating with restoration project proponents about their needs, and by continuing to do outreach to solicit feedback on ways we can improve. Next slide. We're happy to answer any questions now or after the next presentation.
Do board members have any questions for Agnes at this point? Jane.
Thanks. And I don't know if the questions are for you or the team, but I'll just dive in. I was interested about the programmatic EIR that was done for the general order and what we take away from this, because I'm just thinking about the investment that was certainly made to do that programmatic EIR, but the agencies aren't using it. They're coming up with a different way to get through CEQA, but what do we learn from that?
Well, what we're hoping is, what we're finding is that the programmatic EIR doesn't address all the concerns of lead local agencies, so they're not willing to use it, and they're, because they could use it, but they have to tear off and do a supplemental, it's additional work. So they're finding that it's easier for them just to do their regular CEQA process. So what we have found, though, is we've found workarounds. The CDFW, SERP, that is a valuable too. And so we're hoping that it does get extended. And, you know, ideally, if we had funding, our region would do some sort of supplemental EIR tearing off that we could then use. But without funding or staff, it's very difficult for us to there's a lot of work that would be involved in that to adopt. But if we could adopt our region-specific CEQA document for the SRGO, that would help us.
Okay. It's interesting. I mean, I think it's just interesting to think about what we might learn from the fact that this whole thing was done and now it's not really as useful as we thought it would be, or, you know, whoever originally.
The intent, yes, the programmatic was to expedite the processing, but the lead local agencies are not using it.
Yeah.
Because they feel, it's easier for them just to do their own process.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. And then I just wanted to maybe ask, is that okay? I'll just go into another question. These two things, the state regional order and the BRIT, can you just clarify how they fit together?
Well, both of them incorporate the pre-application process. So the idea is to focus on coordinating with, you know, coordination between projects and the agencies early so that we're not slowing down projects by the time they need their permits. And the BRIT as a whole is helping projects modify their project design so they can meet all these permitting tools that are available, such as the SRGO and the others that I mentioned.
So the BRIT is dealing with all sizes of projects.
Yes.
Yes. And the state, the restoration order is for a specific category of projects.
Ms. Batty, I'll jump in. Chief Lichten, the manager of the Watershed Management Division. Agnes, your explanation is spot on. I'll just note the BRIT is a multi-agency, coordinated multi-agency group, and it's primarily reviewing projects that happen to have funding under Measure AA to support Bay shoreline restoration. By contrast, the statewide restoration general order is a statewide order for certain categories of restoration projects. So we've got a group that's reviewing projects that typically involve restoration, and then we have an order that there's, you know, the Venn diagram, there's some overlap, but they're sort of different.
Yeah, ideas. But they're both about streamlining the process, making things be more coordinated, move forward. I mean, it's all really good news, I think, but I'm just trying to understand the, thank you, the connection.
Questions? Shall we turn to Paul Hunt? Paul, would you like to go ahead?
Yes. Can I verify that you can hear me?
Yes, very clearly.
Thank Wonderful. You. Thank you so much. So yes, my name is Paul Han. I'm the section manager for the Watersheds and Wetlands section. We are the section that developed the statewide restoration general order. I want to thank the board members for inviting the State Water Board to present at this time. For what it's worth, I grew up in the Bay Area, and it's near and dear to my heart, so I'm sorry I can't be there in person today, but I do appreciate the time to come and speak with you. next slide. So just to, I'm assuming the board members are familiar with the statewide restoration order, but in case not, this was developed in consultation with other agencies to expedite permitting for restoration activities. The agencies we work with are listed on this slide, but I want to highlight our work specifically with CDFW. We invited CDFW in at a number of opportunities to review our CEQA document during its development with the explicit intent of ensuring that the CEQA document would be useful to them and that it could serve as a complement to their CEQA statutory exemption for restoration projects. With regards to what it applies to, a restoration project is one that would result in a net increase in area functions and services, and it might be performed for a number of reasons, including voluntary restoration or required restoration projects. The development of the order is a key deliverable under the governor's Cutting Green Tape initiative and supports the 30 by 30 initiative. Next slide. So we feel that the use of the order has been good, given how new it is. Statewide, there are 51 projects that have either used it or are in process of using it as a draft. Region 2 is actually in the top three of the regions using the SRGO, so we appreciate the partnership there. I would like to take a minute to address the CEQA, because that's obviously a concern. As a statewide programmatic CEQA, it is necessarily done at a high level, and there is the expectation that additional CEQA might need to be done on a case-by-case basis, depending on how a particular project is updated. However, certainly if that project is consistent with the assumptions made in the statewide restoration order CEQA document, the amount of CEQA that needs to be done should be less And it opens up doors to things like what Liz mentioned with supplemental CEQA and other CEQA tools that are more streamlined. Now, we have heard from other areas, specifically the banking industry, that they need help understanding how to use our CEQA document in the most efficient way. And so this is something that we recognize there's a need for some additional information and training, and that's something that we want to focus on in the upcoming year. But I do need to be clear, as a statewide programmatic document, the CEQA was not intended and never could be used for every particular CEQA, every particular project out there. I also want to touch briefly, next slide. I also want to touch briefly on the Advancing Restoration Interagency Summit that Liz mentioned. This was an excellent opportunity for us to get together with the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the various regional boards. We had great facilitation by the California Landscape Stewardship Network. This was a really good opportunity to identify the items that were challenging and places where we needed to focus to continue to clear the runway for restoration projects. It was a great opportunity to get to know our counterparts at CDFW and understand what their needs were, figure out ways to strengthen our connections, and identify things that we needed to work on to enable more consistent coordinated restoration work. One of the things that came out of it was just a recognition that we needed to channel our common goals to help catalyze the movement to advance beneficial restoration through regulatory efficiency. And we really recognized that that continued coordination was a focus for that. Next slide. So, moving forward, you know, I mentioned that we want to focus on, you know, expansion of the statewide general order for restoration. We want to focus on some training and assistance with in concert with our state and NGO partners. We have begun and are continuing to meet with CDFW on a monthly basis to continue coordination. CDFW is working on a SharePoint site that agencies can use to help house and share restoration information. We're working on understanding with the intention to harmonize some of our processes. This, as we look forward further, the Restoration General Order has been highlighted as part of the salmon restoration. We're also looking at where we might use the Statewide Restoration General Order or a similar approach to address wildfire restoration, because there's a huge need for that in the state as well. So there's a lot of things that we're looking on in the future. And again, I appreciate the time to talk to the board, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Paul. Questions from board members?
I just got one. When we first heard about this general order, the resource conservation districts were pretty involved. And are we hearing positive reports from them on how this is working in their communities?
You know, I have not asked specifically about the restoration conservation districts, the resource conservation districts. What I will tell you is that everyone that we have talked to has been decidedly positive about the statewide restoration order. So I think we definitely are moving the needle in the right direction towards getting interests and activities aligned to better implement restoration activities. But I'm sorry, I can't speak specifically to the the resource conservation districts.
I think Eileen's got something to say.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we're fortunate to have Erica Lovejoy from Suscon, who's going to be speaking later too.
Great.
Okay. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thanks. Yeah, I'll just note, for whatever it's worth, I'm in San Mateo County, where there's a very active RCD, as there is in other counties, Marin, Sonoma, in our region. the needs are really significant, particularly with the storms and the amount of trees down. And so the need to be able to get in and do restoration work so significant to protect against community flooding and other damage. So this is great news from what I can see, and really appreciate all the work on it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Are there other comments from board members? I think we're all interested going forward in the projects that are under your review and consideration. And I expect we have some commenters in the room today.
Yeah, and next I think is Louisa Valiello from EPA Region 9 is going to talk. And then after that, Erica Lovejoy, and then we have some other public speakers.
Welcome, Louisa.
Thank you, board members, for having me. I'm Louisa Valiello from EPA Region 9 Water Division and San Francisco Bay Program. And I had a couple slides. Excellent. Thank you for bringing them up. so I serve on the Policy and Management Committee of the BRIT. And I can't remember if Agnes touched on that. So I, as part of advertising what BRIT is to both a regional audience and actually a national audience, we often get asked to share the Bay Area story of, you know, how are we doing innovative permitting? And they really do want to get down to the numbers. So the slide that is shown here is something that we update in concert with BRIT, making sure that we are keeping our numbers current. So I hope you can read them. But part of sharing what BRIT is setting expectations around what BRIT engagement means. So we really talk about BRIT as having the secret sauce of the pre-application phase. And that is that projects that come, that qualify to get on the BRIT list, are restoration focused and have the attention of all the permitting agencies that it takes to get restoration work done in the Bay Area. And that is something that is hard to replicate in the fact that we had to find funding, you know, to ensure that each agency could fully staff the people that Agnes showed in that picture. And we're close to the first round of 5 years of having funded BRIT. And so people also expect us to have these numbers, you know, what's being done, what was invested in, and are people happy, you know, with the service that BRIT is providing. So we message on all those things. The agencies on this chart that we're showing have also been working in tandem concurrently on these other permitting tools, ways to improve how we do permitting. Sometimes that is time, but not always. And that is part of what we also message about BRIT, which is cooperative and collaborative permitting may not actually increase the complete time from planning a project to permitting than what you would have hoped. But when you get your application ready, it is been in consultation with BRIT for enough time that we know that your application will be processed within permit time limits set often statutory and regulatorily. So that is the benefit of having invested and building trust between the agencies and the permitting permitted community, the restoration community. So if you don't qualify for an expedited or innovative permitting tool, that doesn't send you back to the dark ages. That is why we have BRIT. BRIT is a way where projects get full attention and are vetted in a way that we know, we, the regulatory agencies, as well as the restoration community, know that the project that's going to be built is going to be a good project, the project that builds the future that we want to see on our shorelines. And those tend to be the most complicated, complex, multifaceted, multi-benefit projects that often just don't fit within a lot of the quote unquote expedited permitting tools. And again, that is okay. And that is why we support BRIT. So my next slide is just to emphasize, this is just a point in time where we want everyone to know that EPA fully supports all restoration of habitat, of water quality in San Francisco Bay. Our congressional delegation has made it happen that we have additional federal resources now at a tune of $54 million a year, which can still take my breath away. And BRIT is one of our commitments to continue to help support through this additional funding through Congress. So I know you've seen this slide before, but just to let you know that we, this is kind of our operating manual right now, close to being final, still in draft, but close to being final. Thank you.
Thank you. And questions for Louisa? I have one quick question that you or Xavier may want to address, which is, as you deal with applications for shoreline projects, is there an intersection with some of this year's dredging projects and their ability to provide material for shoreline restoration?
Jen Ziu is in the audience and is certainly my colleague who knows the best on very current dredging projects, but you will notice on our San Francisco Bay program priorities, beneficial reuse of dredge material is absolutely, you know, again, it's the top 11. We want to make progress on all of these major initiatives that is absolutely needed to build our resilient shoreline. If you have a specific dredging question, I can definitely bring Jen down to answer it.
Well, it's lovely to hear from both of you, given how long you've been invested in this and how long it's taken to get some real money into the mix. Jen, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing me up here. So Alexis, you know that EPA is one of the partner agencies with the long-term management of sediment in the San Francisco Bay Area, and along with the Water Board and Corps of Engineers. Oh, I'm blanking on all the other agencies, CDFW resource agencies. So we are, the LTMS is working very hard, particularly with our management committee, to make sure that we are within the programmatic of the LTMS, we're looking for opportunities to include some of these innovative projects, particularly ecotone levees, horizontal levees that could use soil and sediment and sand, and trying to marry the projects, particularly Oakland, Port of Oakland. We'd love to marry that. There's some things in the works. They're very draft right now, so I can't really discuss specifics. But know that that is definitely a focus for us. We want... The core right now is the big big prize, if you will, in terms of volumes. So that is definitely what we're focused on. And Javier could probably speak some more to that.
Javier Fernandez, head of the planning division here at the Water Board, and dredging is in my shop. I'll just add a couple things. In addition to dredging, we're looking for Bell Marine Keys to come online, and that will really help. Right now, we just have Cullinan and Montezuma that accept, and Cullinan is just about filled up. However, we've also been working through the BRIT, through Agnes, and through the LTMS, Brenda Gaden with the BCDC, on looking at upland sources of material and revising the CWAP. And we've working with the South Bay Salt Pond Project, there's been a conceptual site model that's been developed, and we're currently exploring options that were identified in that conceptual site model to help facilitate the upland materials coming to sites in South Bay, where it tends to be a little more difficult to get dredge sediments. We've also worked with Army Corps to implement a strategic placement pilot project. It was, I think, 80,000 cubic yards. We were hoping to get 100,000 cubic yards. I'm a little concerned maybe that's not enough to measure, so we might need to actually do further pilot studies with additional volumes in order to study it, and as well as in additional areas. So that's a quick update.
Thank you, each of you. Will anyone else be commenting?
Yes, we have Erica Lovejoy from SF.
I'll just make a comment while Erica's coming up. And Bill, you and I are the ones that have been on the board the longest time. So I just am reflecting here how far this conversation has come. Yeah. This is my eighth year serving on this board. And I think when I started, this was like such a frustrating conversation about why are we not doing more, and to see how far it's come is really wonderful. So thanks to everyone.
Welcome, Erica.
Good morning, everyone. Really great to be here today. Appreciate the opportunity to comment. Again, I'm Erica Lovejoy with the California-based nonprofit Sustainable Conservation. We work very closely with restoration project proponents as well as agencies. And some of you may recall that last year I presented here on how the statewide restoration general order fits in with a broader multi-agency collaborative effort that was initiated by Sustainable Conservation to help develop efficient permitting actions for restoration with all of the major state and federal agencies. And we played a major role in helping the State Water Board with technical assistance on the SIRGO, as well as in particular on the development of the Programmatic Environmental Impact Report. And we also helped the other agencies to all work together with the Water Board to cover the same set of project types, including multi-benefit projects, and develop a similar set of general conditions to go along with those authorizations to help move more projects forward. So just a few things I wanted to mention today. First and foremost, really impressed with the progress that Region 2 has made and all of the excellent work of the staff to really take advantage of the statewide restoration general order. I have heard excellent things. It's a tremendous, and it's clear that you all have worked very hard. So thank you for that. We encourage you to keep up the good work. We've heard from applicants that one of the biggest benefits of the statewide general order has been those coordinated set of conditions that all of the agencies had worked to develop. You know, it's helped them with more consistency and regulatory certainty, and to also utilize the other agencies' authorizations, because they're all kind of moving forward with a common set of conditions. And we anticipate that it will become easier over time the more folks use these tools. In regards to the hot topic of the day, the CEQA Programmatic Environmental Impact Report, we feel that there's more potential for it to be utilized in your region and throughout the state. The Programmatic Environmental Impact Report has been used at least 10 times that we know of between the Central Coast, North Coast, Central Valley regional boards, as well as with the state board. And As Paul was mentioning, you know, part of the utility of this document is to really take advantage of the analysis and findings that have already been done so they don't have to be revisited, and then do a much more focused analysis, say maybe an addendum or a supplemental document. And that is absolutely less time and resources than doing an individual document. That really does save money for applicants. And that's particularly important with the state budget situation, who knows what's going to happen with all the grant funds. And we really need to use all of the tools at our disposal, in addition to the statewide, the statutory exemption for restoration, and definitely appreciate the agency taking advantage of that, because it's a great tool. We've heard loud and clear from project proponents and agency staff about the need for training on utilization, especially of that programmatic environmental impact report. It's complicated. And given our involvement with development of the PEIR, Sustainable Conservation will absolutely offer any technical assistance we can to the State Water Board and the other agencies to help with additional materials. And we happen to have a new dedicated website, acceleratingrestoration.org, that is already an excellent platform for information on all of the efficient permitting tools that are already out there for all the agencies. There's tools to help look at what protection measures you may need that are common to all the different agencies, links to the applications, tips, and more. So I encourage everybody to check that out. And then in regards to the BRIT, of course, just like the regional board staff involved in that, we really appreciate all of the hard work of the agencies to work together to try and move the needle on restoration. It is an immensely complicated puzzle we're all trying to solve. We continue to encourage all of the folks involved in this process, and I know they are definitely trying to do it, but to take advantage and really look to see how the new existing permitting tools for restoration, programmatics, new programmatic permits, the PEIR, other tools that indeed are intended to cover some multi-benefit restoration, to try and, you know, really utilize those and, you know, build off of the statewide interagency coordination that has already occurred, and then save limited resources around perhaps creating new programmatics or new EIRs, just to only where really the gaps truly exist. We want to take advantage of those resources. So just to conclude, really appreciate all the great work of the agencies and expanding the thinking about what can be done and how we can all get more done together. So thanks so much for everybody for your effort and the time today to speak. Thanks.
Thank you.
Great. And I guess I just want to take a few minutes to thank Louisa, Erica, and our last speaker that's in the room is Amy Hutchell, who's the Executive Officer for the California Coastal Conservancy. I want to thank them all for coming in person today to, you know, provide their perspective. Thanks, Amy.
Thank
you. I still give you credit for showing up.
Great. Yeah, good morning, Chair and members of the board. And I really want to thank the board and thank Eileen White and Keith Licton and Liz Morrison and Agnes Ferris and other water board staff for their efforts to improve the efficiencies for restoration projects in San Francisco Bay. Through both the BRITS coordination and pre-consultation and through policy and programmatic improvements, including, I guess it's called the SIRGO. I was going to say the full name, but I like that acronym. The use of Department of Fish and Wildlife's statutory exemption. These have been really beneficial to projects. And I think to get to your question, one purpose of the BRIT or one goal of the BRIT is during the pre-application process to work with project proponents to develop their permit applications in a way that allows them to be as efficient as possible. So the BRIT is providing some technical assistance in terms of which programmatic permits could be utilized for various projects. So I think that's an important role of the BRIT. And then I would just also reiterate again the importance of this restoration work. You know, we are facing significant issues in San Francisco Bay, particularly around sea level rise. And these restoration projects are providing nature-based coastal flood risk management and sea level rise adaptation, recovery of species and biodiversity, improving the health of the bay, and providing access and recreation opportunities for people. I think that the India Basin 900 Innis project is a really great example of that. And the BRIT, as Louisa mentioned, is approaching 5 years. That was the original timeline for the BRIT. Amazingly, we have saved money. Unlike many of the projects we're constructing, the BRIT has actually been less expensive than we budgeted. But we are right now working on securing funding to keep the BRIT going. So the funding has come through Measure AA, the San Francisco Bay Restoration Authority's funding, the State Coastal Conservancy, East Bay Regional Park District, Valley Water, and the Bay Area Toll Authority. And I definitely want to thank those funders. And finally, on this topic of like the timelines, I think one thing we've learned with the BRIT when we set up the original agency agreements, we kind of laid out goals for number of days, you know, for simple and complex projects. And it's not for project proponents. Actually, the most important thing is just having your permits in time to start construction when the construction windows open. So it's really about working with the BRIT early on in the pre-application to figure out what that deadline is, and then working towards meeting that deadline during pre-application and application. So again, thank you very much for all your support for cutting green tape for San Francisco Bay.
Thank you for coming, Amy. Questions? Comments? Anything you want to add, Eileen?
I think just in summary, you can see it's a great collaboration. I think we all share the same goal. And I think, as Amy said, by the project proponents coming early, meeting with the regulatory agencies, we really are seeing permits being expedited faster. But it's a great collaboration, I think, in the Bay Area, as you see that from all our speakers today.
And I think a great team. Thank you, Liz, Agnes. Thank you to our very important federal and state partners for being here today, and to SUSCON. We really appreciate this update and look forward to all that might be accomplished this year on the ground. Any comments before we move forward here? If not, I'd like to thank our management team.
We do have two online more? Public commenters.
Oh, superb. Let's go ahead, Julie.
So April's on, and Karen Hyde should be on the Zoom platform.
Thank you.
Dakota.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please go ahead, April.
Good morning. My name is April Zahn, and I'm the manager of the environmental compliance team for Ducks Unlimited's Western Regional Office. Thanks for the opportunity to address the commission this morning. For those of you that may not be familiar with Ducks Unlimited, we are a nonprofit organization that works across the U.S. to implement wetland conservation projects for the benefit of people and wildlife. For over 30 years, DU has worked with a diverse suite of public and private partners to deliver restoration projects that have benefited close to 800,000 acres of habitat across California. We have a dedicated staff that works in the San Francisco Bay Area and have been privileged to be part of some of the more significant wetland and estuarine restoration projects around the North and South Bay, including the Cullinan Ranch Restoration Project and the South Bay Salt Ponds Restoration Projects. Our perspective is that of an entity that supports all aspects of restoration project delivery, including funding, design, permitting, and implementation. In that context, regulatory tools such as SRGO are critical to achieving our conservation-focused mission and directly tied to our ability to responsibly administer public and private restoration dollars. While we haven't had an opportunity to utilize SRGO in the Bay Area yet, we have successfully permitted several large-scale restoration projects through the North Coast, Central Valley, and Central Coast Regional Boards, and have found the permit tool to be efficient, predictable, and flexible. We are currently working closely with the San Francisco Bay Regional Board to advance a 6,000-acre estuarine restoration project around the Sonoma Creek Baylands, which we anticipate will be able to utilize SRGO. This exciting project, which reflects a collaboration between tribal, federal, local, and private partners, will certainly benefit from the SRGO framework, including its emphasis on early agency collaboration and consultation and the predictability provided by the order's process and general protection measures. We believe the development of a CEQA document for this project will likely require a significant investment of staff time and grant dollars, and it's been unclear what efficiencies may be gained by tiering from the programmatic EIR. To that end, we encourage the commission to provide dedicated staff to the regional board that can work on regionally tailored solutions for efficiently navigating CEQA and improving the outcomes of the general order. Finally, I wanted to mention that DU has been working closely with the Corps, regional board, and EPA for over 5 years to develop an in-lieu fee program for the San Francisco Bay watershed. Once approved, the San Francisco ILF program will allow permittees to purchase freshwater, wetland, and estuarine advanced credits in lieu of having to perform mitigation themselves. Funds directed to the ILF program will be leveraged by DU in collaboration with an interagency review team to deliver large-scale wetland and estuarine restoration projects in both the North and South Bay. We view the ILF program as one tool in a diverse restoration funding toolbox and are incredibly excited to put it to good use, hopefully later this year. We look forward to continuing to partner with you, and thank you for your time. Perfect.
Thank you. Perfectly timed, April, and thank you for being an important partner with your organization in our larger goal here. Our next speaker
should be Karen High.
Please go ahead, Karen.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, this is Karen High.
Citizens Committee to complete the refuge. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments. CCCR was a stakeholder in the long process to establish a state definition of wetlands and the dredge and fill procedures. We advocate for the protection of wetlands and protection and restoration of areas that will continue to support tidal wetlands as sea levels continue to rise. We appreciate the update provided by staff and all of their efforts. We're not surprised to hear lead agencies have not relied on the Sirgo PEIR. In our August 2021 comments to the State Water Board, we identified numerous substantive issues with that document. But it's good to hear, despite this concerning CEQA issue, staff are finding ways to expeditiously authorize restoration projects. In 2023, the San Francisco Bay Joint Venture released its updated vision for restoring the estuary, increasing the target for protection and restoration of tidal wetlands from 100,000 to 125,000 acres. To date, we have restored approximately 54,000 acres. The challenges facing bay ecosystems posed by our history of development and habitat destruction are and will continue to be magnified by climate change. We need to act quickly to restore as many acres of sustainable tidal wetlands as we can. Successful implementation of restoration requires thorough and thoughtful review, whether it's review of the proposed engineering design, consideration of the suitability of the proposed site for the type of restoration proposed, impacts to beneficial uses, and other concerns. Our major concern with cutting green tape, whether this is through use of CEQA exemptions, core nationwide permits for large-scale restoration projects, or through use of the Sirgo, is reducing opportunities for public review and comment. For this reason, we are relying on staff to continue to thoroughly review proposed restoration projects to determine whether they truly meet the requirements of the general order and that what is authorized has suitable permit conditions, including monitoring and adaptive management requirements to ensure restoration will be successful. So glad to hear funding is being secured to continue the BRIT. We feel the BRIT is the most effective means of cutting green tape. Early review of restoration projects ensures that project proponents receive feedback from the regulatory and resource agencies and can design the proposed restoration to avoid or mitigate substantive agency concerns. We urge that participation in the BRIT process continue to be a priority for the Water Board. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. We appreciate your participation. Julie, are there any others?
Speakers.
Any final comments on the board? Thank you all for this presentation. And I think we all look forward later this year to understanding how things have gone and projects that have been completed and projects that we will be investing in. So we all appreciate this. It's so interesting to be part, I think, in our role here as board members, to be present for the change in how we as a state manage stormwater, so that it's not just down and away, how we look to water recycling, how we look to sediment as a component of habitat restoration. So many things that we were so quick to discard, of course, in times past have become assets. And with that, I believe this will conclude our public session of the March 13th San Francisco Bay Water Board meeting. I would again like to thank our management team and our attorneys, Yuri Wan and Chesh Sablan, and look forward to when we will gather next. I wanted you to be aware that our next meeting is offsite, looking at some of these projects we spoke of today, including Ennis Road, and that will occur on April 10th in San Francisco. We look forward to reconvening here in May. Thank you, everyone, and I will say we are adjourned. Yeah. I'll remember. Thank you.